The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Weekly today, crack-a-lacking Mackhams take their first win of the season. Showdown at Stamford Bridge as one team plays with heart and wins, and the other does the same and loses. Elsewhere, despite Palace revolution, Eagles still can't quite knock off the leaders, and Old Trafford, Stoke aren't out of it, Man U may well be. We round up the Premier League action that matters. We get Sid's view on the Clasico. There's the latest news from the rest of Europe. Roma in 10, make it 9 from 9. PSG very nearly lose, and Klopp's Ruhr Gunners take the derby with Schalke. There's post tweets and was Leroy Fer unfair? A Norwich fan speaks in today's Football Weekly. Well, from the roar of the Stadium of Light to the lights of the stadium in the roar, what a weekend it's been, and what a lineup we have to celebrate it here on Football Weekly. Jaunty Mac and Bazza, hello to you all.
Hello. Right.
Hey, Jimbo.
Hey.
Group introduction.
Yeah, that's Paul McInnes. You've not got long, have you, Paul, in a being here sense?
I did in this in the original timing, but the time has been moved because of all the trees and
the storm.
Because the wind. Yeah, the massive storm that's allowed everybody that extra half an hour in bed that they were hoping for.
Michael Cox couldn't come in at all. His tactics board got blown over. The red and blue discs flying through the air. Severing heads.
Yeah.
But Paul, you've got another important...
I'm going to interview the writer-director of the movie Dom Hemingway, which is coming soon, and it stars Jude Law and very much the...
And her off Game of Thrones.
Yes, that's right. And he's playing the very much the Ben Kingsley sexy beast-style role. I'll just stop.
The Targaryen woman.
All right, Daenerys.
Thank you.
I really don't like Jude Law.
All right.
I've got no time
Ian McCall.
For him.
No, I think the...
What's wrong with poor Jude Law?
Oh, just kind of...
The
his acting
pendulum.
Style is just not.
He's one of our finest actors.
Taste.
Yeah, I think he's since his hair is the theory is since his hair has started to recede, which it has very noticeably. He's no longer one of the world's 10 most attractive men, and so he's actually he can't coast. And he's like
Come
the
on.
Anti Joe Hart. He can't coast anymore.
Ah,
he has to concentrate and put.
No, that's
in.
Just wrong on so many levels.
Oh, you look good on it though. Actually, last night though, watching you
no,
on telly,
I wasn't saying. Oh yeah, go on.
Watching you on telly last night, where there was something going on with the makeup there that you did almost have a second screen in your forehead.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they should use that, actually, because if you notice the way they've got all those video images going, they could just project stuff straight into my forehead and save a lot of wattage. Right. But I think you're wrong. No, just about Jude Law, I think he's still...
I feel much the same way about Daniel Day-Lewis. You know the way that some movie stars can open a movie, you know, Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
I will not go to see a movie if Daniel Day-Lewis is in it.
Really?
Yeah. And he's a fine actor.
Yeah.
But... there's just something about him that puts me off going to see his film.
That's interesting, Ian.
My dad's friend goes running with Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, there you go.
And do they run like 25 miles at a time with one leg in the middle of the night?
Very intense running. Mm.
Boy. Does he run with his hands or something crazy like that?
I don't know. I've never seen him perform his running tricks.
Right.
Because he lives really rural, doesn't he?
Yeah, he lives because my parents kind of live in a town very close to the countryside in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And he kind of lives in Scotland.
What town is that?
Bray.
Oh.
Surely the point about Daniel Day-Lewis was that he lived in the back of a tanner's workshop on the Ponte Vecchio in Florence. Am I wrong about that?
No, he lives in Ireland now, I believe. Ooh. At least that's what my dad tells me. I don't think he has any reason to lie to me over it.
Yeah, he lives over...
Kids always think that about
over a pub in Tullamore.
Right, okay. In other news, football. Hey, Barry, let's relive your night of celebrations after your extraordinary win in the Weir Tyne Derby.
I had a Chinese. Went to bed. It was rock and roll.
Right.
That was a fantastic win. I mean, what Sunderland lacked in finesse, and they did lack a little in finesse, they more than made up for in heart and spirit. They were first to every ball in the opening half hour, won all the challenges, got the early goal, which was crucial to help them settle.
What a great celebration. The atmosphere looked amazing at the Stadium of Light, but that moment when he goes over and celebrates with the fans, magnificent, no?
Yeah, and he got a yellow card for it, which is always a shame, but... yeah, I mean, the jump into the crowd with just utter jubilation is always good. And, you know, it's a bit petty to be getting booked for it, but, you know, these can't be helped. I mean, myself and Max had Serge from Kasabian on our radio show a couple of weeks ago, and he, I don't know if you've seen it, and it's worth looking up if you haven't, he scored an absolutely wonderful goal at Old Trafford in a Soccer Aid match, and he was, like, he's the lead guitarist in one of the best bands in the UK, used to playing in front of massive crowds of adoring fans.
I'm not sure if name-dropping works if you have to explain who the person is afterwards.
I'm making the point that despite his profession and the adulation he receives on a daily basis while on tour, he said that the joy of scoring a goal in front of a big crowd like that is just indescribable. Mm. So, you know, to be getting...
Well, that certainly puts the stadium alight into perspective.
To be getting booked for it is not very nice.
Okay, anyway. Now, let's get back to the Fletcher celebrations. And then, so they've got the early goal. And then?
And then, well, Newcastle gradually got a foothold in the game and equalised shortly after half-time. I feared the worst. But a marvellous substitution by Gus Poyet, who took off Adam Johnson, brought on Fabio Verini, and he scored. And his celebration was a bit special too. Gus Poyet actually really has the wood on Newcastle because he scored against them a lot as a player. And he's now beaten them three times in a row with... teams that were below them in the league.
I'm glad you mentioned the Brini celebration. Why did you think it was special?
Well, he went into the crowd as well. And right, okay. Then he did the old crest.
But he also did a great goal, but a fantastic slide. He ran over, then he goes into the slide, and then he comes out of the slide, and he's back up running without breaking. It was a magnificent thing. It was a bit kind of T3000-esque. The other thing I thought that was remarkable about that post-game was that on his Match of the Day interview, bloke says to him, "Wow, this is beyond your wildest dreams. Though you could never have hoped for something like this to come on in the derby and score the winner in a 2-1 win." And Brini says, "No, that's exactly what I did think about. Actually, I've got one of those mental coaches, and we've been envisaging this very scene, and you know, to help prepare me for it. And in fact, I texted this to my friend the other day that I'm going to score the winner in a 2-1 derby victory."
No way.
Yeah. Supposedly,
I wish he'd told us that before the game, and we could all have run down to the bookies.
Yeah. Anyway, magnificent. So there you go. So problems sorted at Sunderland, off the bottom of the table, Barry.
The problems are far from sorted, but that's a huge step in the right direction. I mean, I think if they'd lost that game, it was game over, season over. But they're off the bottom of the table. They've got 4 points, and they've got a match against Hull next, which I think they'll consider very winnable.
You're only 4 points from safety.
This seems to be Premier experienced players playing in the positions to which they're accustomed as well, which would seem to suggest you might have a better chance of getting better results.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird because Stephen Fletcher outjumped Paul Dummett for the goal. Dummett, I think it was his first Premier League start, playing out of position in a weird Tyne derby, which is... You know, that's a potential career ender to make a catastrophic error like that. I mean, he got caught flat-footed. It could happen to anyone. But it was strange that he was marking Sunderland's centre-forward for the corner.
All right. Well, we're all sky high now at Sunderland. But here's Jonathan Wilson saying, last two Sunderland managers to win derbies lasted 11 games and 7 games before being sacked. Good luck, Goose. Yeah.
Can we show a bit of love for Lee Cattermole?
Go on then.
Well, I kind of had half an eye on the game yesterday because I was getting ready to do the Chelsea minute by minute. But whenever I saw him, he was kind of screening well in front of the back four and really keeping Loic Remy right out of the game.
Oh, that's proper.
So often he is maligned as a, you know, yellow card picker-upper, but he was
excellent more than
yesterday.
That. Yeah. Okay. When you prepare to do your, say, for example, Chelsea match, what does that involve? Do you have some kind of pre-game ritual, or what do you like
stretches,
to do?
Oh, like
yoga.
Some sort of superstitions, that sort of thing?
I know, I'm just wondering, when you say you were, you know, kind of getting ready to do your thing.
Journalistic research, or?
Oh, yeah, just a bit of research, I suppose.
Do you visualise at all any of the sentences you might be typing later on?
No, not quite. No. Right. I do wear the same shin pads, though, every time.
You didn't. You mean you didn't visualise having to write a sentence about Joe Hart making a mistake?
Hey, that brings us on nicely to the other game. There were four matches on Sunday, but the other big game, Chelsea Man City. Is that a marker? Have they put a marker down now, Chelsea, by beating City? Is that what's happened?
A marker for what?
It's a kind of Premier League marker, isn't it? Because they're both big teams and stuff.
It was quite... I mean, it came out of the blue. And the Five Live commentary is quite good on it, because Alan Green is berating John Terry for a terrible pass at precisely the moment that Fernando Torres taps in. I think it was 1-1 would have seemed like an appropriate result. So maybe the fact that Chelsea actually won it means it's more of a marker, because it seems some sort of juju hoodoo thing, maybe. But I would say that City have a lot of heart to take out of that game.
Have a heart to take out in a very real sense. It's very nicely done there, Paul. Ian?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that Torres, I mean, he had that horrific miss around the half hour when he really should have scored. I mean, he's in acres of space. I thought it was interesting that really kind of spurned him on after that. And, I mean, about a few minutes later, I mean, he just burned Kyle Clichy for pace. Kind of like a well-worn Clichy.
Yeah, and he does seem to have got the pace back, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then he set it up for Sherland, and then he scored the winning goal. And of course, he had that magnificent shot out of nowhere off the angle of the crossbar and post.
So he looked good, but you mentioned Joe Hart, and we should get onto that, because first off, I mean, describe the incident for anyone who didn't see it.
Well, it was, I can't remember who played the pass, was it Oscar?
Willian.
So it's Willian. Gets this poor John Terry pass through a deflection, and he chips the ball into no man's land in between the box and halfway, and it's a chase down between Nastasic and Torres. Torres is looking at the ball all the time, but Nastasic is turning round, and the ball is rearing up. Nastasic looks at the ball, sees the keeper, and tries to head it back to him. But the keeper, rather than being in position on 6-yard box, is charging right at him, trying to head it clear himself in a manner which I think Dom Fifield has a whole paragraph in his match report saying previous times he's done that and it's gone wrong. And as a result, Hart misses the header, the ball rolls on, Torres uses his pace and just sneaks in the shot just before it gets to the post and scores the winner.
Right.
Now, my initial response, watching it admittedly slightly bleary in a pub, was that Nastasic did see the keeper coming. And could have, your keeper was doing the wrong thing, but Nastasic could have made a different decision. And Hart obviously says, "I was shouting, I was saying, keeper, no, it's my ball." He did swear, that's quotes, that's in quote marks.
Right, yeah. On Match the Day 2, what they did was they pixelated his mouth.
Oh, very clever. The general consensus is that Hart shouldn't have been doing what he did.
Right, well, indeed.
And somebody said on 606, which I thought was quite interesting, that they think he just gets bored. That he kind of wants to be involved in the game,
right,
and he wants to make a contribution. And so he might have had in his mind's eye, he might have been visualising winning that header, getting the ball out to the fullback and creating one last chance for City.
It's one of the key assets of a good keeper, though, isn't it? The ability to concentrate and the ability to keep focused on the game. And Hart just seems to be losing it quite a lot. I mean, you kind of think of the general skills for a goalkeeper, okay, shot stopping, kicking, all that jazz, but concentration is really key for any goalkeeper. I mean, you look at somebody like Victor Valdes, who very rarely makes mistakes, but, you know, he's always focused on the game.
Manuel Pellegrini didn't seem best pleased with him, and you'd have to wonder, I mean, if he drops him and someone comes in and does a good job, is there a very real chance that Hart could miss out on the World Cup?
Well, I presume he would be at least in the squad, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the way that we go around picking our England squad, where as long as you're in a top four club, it doesn't really matter whether you're playing or not. Chris Smalling.
Who would replace him then? I don't think Ruddy's good enough, is he?
I think Ruddy's
don't
good
know.
Enough.
Surely Fraser Foster, no?
But you can't really pick a goalkeeper who isn't playing on a regular basis.
Well, I don't know, the Spanish did.
Shea Given.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks for that, Ian. I just want to follow up something. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say the point is at City that he doesn't really have any challenger at the minute. This Pantelimon is distinctly second best, right, so they don't have anybody pushing him.
And you mentioned Shea Given. Like, he had an absolute mare at the last time he was playing for Ireland.
I think
in
he
a
was
major
joking.
Tournament.
You were joking, weren't you, Ian?
I don't think he was.
No?
But wasn't he getting his game without playing?
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, then. And no handshake at the end. And, you know, fair enough. They don't want to shake hands.
Pellegrini took grave exception to Jose Mourinho jumping into the crowd behind the visitors' bench, and Mourinho says he went in to celebrate with his son and that it's not his fault the season ticket Chelsea gave his son happens to be behind the visitors' bench.
Fair enough.
So
that's a good explanation. All right, then. Let's close off part one with that, and part two, I suspect, we'll have a bit more Premier League right after this. Hey, chums, how about Liverpool? They had a 4-1 victory against a West Brom side that is, well, no pushover.
No, five games unbeaten they were before that.
Right.
Suarez, though. Seems like one of the talking points from the weekend is how many great strikers there are in the Premier League
because of
United's performance as well, and with Aguero and
Torres. Who's United's top striker then?
Well, they've got Van Persie and Rooney, who are both kind of
I suppose so, fair enough. Okay.
But the Suarez hat-trick was just...
Hey, amazing. Did you see the stat about how many hat-tricks he scores? He scores hat-tricks more often than any other player in the Premier League. He scores a hat-trick every 20.3 top-flight games. That's a crazily
high... It's
four
for Liverpool now, isn't it?
Yeah, interesting. But he looks happy, doesn't he? He was, you know, he looked very cheery.
Well, he should. He's playing well. He's combining well with Sturridge. Liverpool are doing well this season.
All right.
And he's also been on the receipt of a kind of unending love-bombing campaign from Liverpool and their fans for about 18 months, where he's committed the most heinous of crimes. I mean, he should be happy. He should be grateful, I would have thought.
Right. Fair enough.
Daniel Sturridge should be happy too.
Yep.
What a goal that was.
It certainly was. They were great goals. They were all just great goals.
There are a few things more beautiful in football than the chip, just leaving the keeper stranded like
that. How about
that?
An 18-yard header?
Is that your favourite bit of football?
Yeah, I think so. I love to see a nice dink over the keeper or a chip from far. I like that.
Right. You like an 18-yard header?
I thought that was amazing.
Barry, what's your favourite bit of football?
I'm always appreciative of fine headers because it's something I could never do, head of football properly. I was just rubbish at it.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, just I scored with one header ever. I remember it vividly because it's the only time I've ever scored.
Was it at the right end?
Yeah, it was. But I just closed my eyes, swung my head and made contact. I remember it hit the post, the keeper fumbled and it dropped over the line.
They all count, Barry.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
All right.
I even remember who was in goals. A fella called Beaver.
There you go, Beaver.
I hope he's still ashamed of himself. Right. The only goalkeeper ever to concede a goal to me from my head.
How did he get that nickname?
I can't remember. Not for the reasons you're thinking.
Steven Gerrard, who some people suggested wasn't a top player. Zidane said that he was the best in the world for some years. And Brendan Rodgers says he's not just top, but he's top, 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 top.
Four tops.
Yeah, indeed.
Is that a new record?
I think it got set on my brother spotted on Sky Sports News.
Oh.
I think Merce said it or something a couple of days before.
Top.
And I think Brendan Rodgers was doing it as a joke.
He was doing it ironically.
Yeah.
But
Henderson
also
played well.
Yeah. Good. Right, I'm going to move on. And Crystal Palace played Arsenal. And, this was heartbreaking, wasn't it, for Palace? You could just see. Terrific atmosphere at Selhurst Park. But those feeble hopes slowly building as for stretches of that game, they were actually outplaying the Premier League leaders.
Yeah, not for as long as stretches of the game as Arsenal were outplaying them.
Wow, fair enough.
And there was, they had chances, and they mostly fell to Shamak, and he did a grand job of messing them up.
Right.
I thought Shamak played quite well. Actually, I thought Palace deserved a point from that game. Thought they were hard done by.
Really,
two fantastic saves from Chesney when they were only a goal down.
That's true.
The
penalty, fair enough. What I'm going to ask about is the red card. Now, apart from as Ian McIntosh says, I hardly think Shamat one-on-one with the goalkeeper can ever be described as a goal-scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
It's actually him who runs into Arteta. He veers away from the ball, crashes into Arteta, and then gets and Arteta sent off for fouling him. I don't get that at all.
Well, was it not a second yellow?
But he actively seeks out Arteta.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if it was a yellow, then it would have been...
No, it was a straight red for preventing a clear goal-scoring opportunity.
But he didn't. The guy ran into him.
I did the minute-by-minute on this, and I just presumed it was a foul, and that all the contentiousness was over whether or not he had prevented a clear goal-scoring opportunity. And then it wasn't until afterwards I kind of realised, actually, he didn't foul him.
Yeah.
So,
well, I thought it was a bit unfair.
But
anyway.
Say if he had tripped him.
If he had.
Then I think the red card would have been justified.
Good. All right, then.
I think there is a sense that it was an unnecessary risk to take, that they could have had somebody a little bit deeper coming back from their own corner that didn't need to happen.
And, of course, you'd have to... There is a very good chance that Shamak would have made a complete dog's breakfast
of it. That's true.
Although he did play quite well. He, you know, in so much as he followed the Harry Redknapp tactical advice of, you know, just run about a bit. And, you know, he put himself about and was quite physical and all that.
Mm. Arsenal are 2 points clear anyway, despite losing Arteta there at the top of the table. And Crystal Palace 5 points off safety now at the bottom.
It's the kind of win, I think, that suggests Arsenal are genuine title contenders. Because, you know, horrible conditions. It was really windy against a team with sort of defending deep with all 10 men behind the ball, and just one of those horrible games that can be very tricky to win, and second, they did win it.
Their second goal was really good, and it was the, you know, the first.
I can't remember it. How did it go?
Yeah, so Ramsey kind of breaks up field, holds the ball, gets enough space away from two men, and then Giroud recognises what's going on, makes a 15-20 yard sprint to the box, little dink, and he heads it down and in. Mm. But it was very clinical. You know, when they only had 10 men, they didn't get that many opportunities, but they took it.
Brilliant.
Speaking of Giroud, that's the thing that would worry me if I were an Arsenal fan. If he gets injured,
right?
Who do they play up front?
Bentner.
Mm. Bentner.
Mm,
yeah. Okay.
No.
Well, nothing. Man United took on Stoke with those top strikers that you're talking about, Rooney top. And Van Persie. They look dreadful.
Yeah, Man they did. United. As one of my colleagues is a Man United, big Man United fan, says, come in, you know, he's like three strikers, three wingers on the pitch by the end. So, yeah. And he was quite in favour because he thinks this is classic, a bit more like the football they're used to with gung-ho, go for it.
Yeah.
But on another way, I was like, what? Really? That sounds potential for absolute disaster. But yeah, they kind of, I mean, it was terrible marking for the winner. But I think it was good to see Rooney playing that well. Good to see Rooney leading. Mm. And I think when he plays like that, he does deserve all the accolades that get sent his way.
It's just the bat, they look really, really struggling. Here's Simon Gleave, who tweets, so Manchester United's first nine games, defeat at Old Trafford, going behind at home against Stoke, conceding first goal five times. Oh, hang on, that's last season. See, the point he's making is, and then they won the title.
I think there was a slight rush to judgment in certain areas of the media last week with regarding David Moyes and his prospects at Manchester United.
But they're 8 points off the top.
But if they get in the top four, that's going to be all right, isn't it, for United this season? Given the titanic change that's gone on at that club, if they finish in the top four, they'll be happy.
You'd hope so. Ryan Shawcross got booked in the dressing room. Booked.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Like, I mean, at what point does the referee's jurisdiction end? Is he allowed, you know, pull up at the set of traffic lights 20 miles down the road and show him a yellow card for something because he's overheard him complaining about the ref's performance? I don't know. It's a strange one.
I thought the jurisdiction was the dressing room. Once you're in there, you're safe.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a church or an embassy?
A little bit like that, yeah.
Cool. All right. Super.
So he literally got booked in the dressing
room? That's what Mark Hughes says.
Right. Because of an altercation
not
in the tunnel.
He said that, yeah, basically that there was that bit of argy-bargy with Robin van Persie as they were leaving the field at the end of the first half, and that the referee then saw this and knocked on the door of the dressing room, and when they opened it, he walked in and brandished.
It was a home delivery of the yellow card.
So Ryan Shawcross could conceivably be sitting at home watching Cash in the Attic this afternoon, and the doorbell goes and he opens it, and there's a referee standing there with a red card. Something he did 3 months ago.
Run with this, Barry. Run
it's
with
great.
It.
Great.
Yeah. Okay, super. Now, there's loads more Premier League to discuss, but I say we take a little break from these parochial concerns and move our attentions a little bit broader to the continent. And Sid Lowe, who's just seen, of course, on Saturday, the latest chapter in the eternal rivalry, etc., between Real Madrid and Barcelona. Sid, are you there?
I am.
Brilliant. So am I. Here.
No, you're not here. You're there.
Yeah, well, philosophical debates aside.
Which makes a change from being neither here nor there.
Well, indeed. Listen, great to hear you. Tell us all about, then, the winners and losers from Saturday's game. A winner, Neymar, who kind of...
Without doubt.
He had a Real Madrid defender kebab with that shot, really, didn't he?
That was amazing. I must admit, I'm sorry to say, in terms of writing the match report, but I didn't notice until I watched the game again yesterday. Yeah, that it's a double nutmeg.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah,
goes through two pairs of legs. I don't think he meant it, by the way, but it was a double nutmeg. Yeah,
it was super stuff. Then you had all the refereeing controversy after Ronaldo was shoved over, really, and the referee just waved it off. That, to be fair, that was a wrong call from the ref, Sid.
Yeah, that was a penalty. It was a sort of one of those silly penalties, but it was definitely a penalty. Yeah,
right. You had your man Carlo Ancelotti starting with Sergio Ramos in midfield.
Mm.
Which is not the way to approach a Clásico, they say in Madrid.
Well, I mean, not least because Madrid do have quite a lot of central midfielders around. It's not like he was in a position where he absolutely had to call on Ramos. He said after the game, Carlo Ancelotti said after the game that he'd done so because Asier and Mendy wasn't fully fit from the previous game, but Iyad Mendy then came on and I thought played really well, actually really changed things a little bit and looked fine, but of course it's not the same looking fine for 50 minutes as looking fine for 90. But it didn't really work for Ramos. It's not a natural position for him. And Madrid, I thought also they slightly struggled partly because Barcelona played deeper than normal. And Barcelona are very conscious of the fact that Madrid run counter-attacks on them. And it seemed to me they'd made the decision, look, we still want the ball, we still want to play it, and I thought they controlled the first 40 minutes really quite well. But we're going to do it a little bit deeper so that they can't run counter-attacks on us. And actually, although he didn't play particularly well, up until that point, pretty much the only person who'd taken any shots was Gareth Bale.
Yeah, Gareth Bale. Or Forrest Bale, as a humorous TV show on Catalan TV has now dubbed him.
Yeah, which is another example of that kind of desire to be upset. Three or four people in the Madrid media kind of going on about this is a terrible lack of respect. And well, sort of, except it was on the Catalan equivalent of a kind of a spitting image style show. Mm. So, I mean, what do you expect? Do you want them to be very polite? And I mean, you know, it struck me as a bit of oversensitivity. What was really extraordinary, is Real Madrid's official website kind of video report of the game, and that's just wow.
What happened, Sid?
Well, it's a 3-minute report on the game, and it's a 3-minute rant, and it's quite extraordinary, really.
A rant about what?
A rant about the referee, a rant about Barcelona, a rant about. Basically everything they could possibly rant about, and some of it is so extreme as to be funny, but there you go.
What's the most extreme thing they say then, Sid?
Well, it talks quite a lot about Barcelona style, you know, and it describes them as the Talibans of the style, that they've given up on their own style and all they did was kick Real Madrid, basically. It was quite bizarre.
Oh, all right, excellent. Anyway, it all leaves Barcelona top of the table, With Real Madrid, 6 points behind them, and Atletico Madrid in second place, because my
they
word, did
brilliant.
They? And 5-0 at the end to Betis.
5-0, yeah, 2 for David Villa, which was really important because he's, I think he's played okay, but he's looked a little slow and he hadn't scored, I think, in 8 games. So that was really important. Another goal for Diego Costa, who's now got more this season in week 10 than in any of his professional seasons before, and we expect some clarity this week with the Spain issue, because while Felipao is saying that that he's going to go with a Brazilian squad and he's going to call him up, we think that this week that Diego Costa will send the formal letter to UEFA, FIFA rather, and say, I do not want to play for Brazil, I want to play for Spain.
Sure, imagine doing that. No, I don't want to play for Brazil, I'm going to play for Spain. And a year ago,
I mean, it's
year
an
ago,
incredible
where was
thing
he?
To do. It yeah. really is an incredible thing.
I mean,
to
if
do
it was Messi or Ronaldo, but this player, I mean, like a year ago, well, was he out on loan still a year ago? Or was he back already with?
He's been on loan at. No, he was back last year, and he had a really good second half to last season with Falcao. But he's been on loan, I think, at 4 different clubs over the last 5 years.
They even sold him at one point.
They sold him and got him back again. I think that must have been the Valladolid move, I think. He's been at Celta, he's been at Rayo Vallecano. Off the top of my head, I can't think who the other one is. Maybe Salamanca, I think he might have been at as well. And he's just been brilliant this year. I mean, he's still a bit nuts, but he's a great player.
See, the Atleti bubble burst a bit when they finally lost a game, but here they are bouncing back with a huge performance against Betis. Are they going to stay up there all the way, do you think?
Well, I think the important thing is that, as you say, the bubble burst of the Espanyol game, they've just played brilliantly against Betis. They also were very good in the Champions League in midweek, admittedly not great opponents in Austria. And I think what that shows is that they are psychologically, emotionally very strong. In the past, Atletico Madrid would have probably had an emotional collapse. So if they don't stay up there, it won't be because they've bottled it. I think if they don't stay up there, it may well be because they get a few injuries. It may well be because the squad doesn't have the kind of depth that some of the other teams have. And it might also be because there will be teams who do to them what Espanyol did, play very deep, be very defensive, and it will be harder for them to find a way through. But they, I mean, they're a properly good side. I still suspect that come the end of the season they won't be in the title race. Bear in mind, I think it was as late as January or February last year that they were 7 points ahead of Real Madrid, and although they beat Madrid in the Copa del Rey final, I think they finished the season something like 8 or 9 behind Madrid.
That was Sid Lowe. There was lots of other great stuff in Europe, as viewers of BT Sports saw, indeed. Let's see, in Italy, Roma, they'd won 8 from 8, but they went to Udine to play Udinese, who hadn't lost at home in over a year. And worse still, they got Maicon sent off early on. So Roma are down to 10 men. Of course, Totti's injured. Gervinho's been one of their ace players, is out. But they still won. They still won, Barry. That's 9. They've won all their first 9 games.
I know. You're looking at me like this is all news to me. Michael Bradley scored. Antonio Di Natale kissed the linesman.
He did, didn't he?
Pinched the ref's cheek. He didn't get booked, but no, Stephen Fletcher does, just for being happy.
Right. It's just it's a different mentality there, you know. They enjoy their life in Serie A. Right, but that was terrific for Roma, and we're going to see if they can make it 10 from 10. God, who are they playing?
Torino.
No, that's on Sunday. They're playing somebody midweek. Cause
oh, they're playing bottom side Chievo.
Chievo.
Oh. Yeah, Chievo,
Chievo lost
sorry.
To at home to a good knowledge, Brian. Thanks. They lost at home to Fiorentina at the weekend. And midweek, Fiorentina play Napoli. That's a huge game. In other Serie A news, Milan lost. They went 2-0 down away to Parma, then did one of their usual late comebacks to make it 2-2, but then ended up losing 3-2. Balotelli was taken off at half-time. There's been a lot of fuss about the fact that he's going to become conformist. There's a lot of headlines Saturday, Friday in Gazetta about away with my old non-conformist ways. I'm going to take out my earring and shave my head and generally knuckle down and be a good boy. And he certainly shaved his head, but he wasn't... seems to have lost some of his pizzazz with it.
Has he been getting up to the same sort of shenanigans in Milan as he was in Manchester?
No, not really.
No.
No, I mean, there have been things, but nothing along those, you
do
know...
Do people want him to lose the devil inside him, or do they like it?
Yeah, I mean, people do. I think the club does, but do they really, Paul? I wonder if they do.
Mm. Mm.
But one thing I should mention is that, amongst other things to emerge post-game, is that Milan have now signed Kazuki Honda... will be arriving in January, as will Adil Rami. So there is a bit of an upgrade going on there. Anyway, super stuff. Roma are 5 points clear of Napoli, who, as I mentioned, are taking on Fiorentina.
Record is 11 straight wins, I think, held by Tottenham Hotspur.
Good for you. But from the start of the season...
It's amazing how knowledgeable I can sound just by reading Paolo Bandini's Serie A rap shortly before entering pod.
Nero Thorbit.
I just think Paolo Bandini should do a Serie A rap. Just like... video to go with the text.
Hey, that'd be a good one, wouldn't it? Mm. With highlights and stuff.
Yeah, but just him rapping.
Oh, you meant like with gold chains and girls dancing?
Yeah,
and I'd like that.
Pumping.
Maybe they could be washing cars. Okay,
could he get some famous rappers in there to go with him too?
I think it'd be a slow start because nobody would know who he was as a rapper to begin with. But when he showed his prowess on these videos, you'd probably get Snoop Dogg on the phone.
Okay. Snoop Lion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, in other Euro news, Paul, crazy times in France. Where did you know that all three promoted sides are in the top five?
I did. There was a brief discussion of it on the television last night, which seemed quite interesting.
Yeah,
and it's not unique to France, but it's particularly strong there.
Yeah.
I was watching the PSG game, the second half, and they were 2-0 down. And
what was that goalkeeper doing?
Well, I kind of thought, how inevitable is it?
You should explain. Go on.
Basically, the PSG have been playing at half pace the entire game. They're 2-0 down. Doesn't really look like there's a way back in it, but then you think they've got all the most famous players in the world playing. They'll probably do it somehow.
They're at Saint-Étienne.
Saint-Étienne.
You get a man sent off with blood pouring from his face.
Oh, yes.
Halloween style.
Yeah, it was very dramatic. Cavani scores a nice finish, as you would expect. Nice, and then it's in the last minute of 5 minutes of added time, and Blaise Matuidi... dinks the first ball into the box that they've tried the entire game, just in the mixer style.
It bounces at the goalkeeper's feet, and the goalkeeper is so alarmed at this that he falls over backwards, allowing the ball to bounce over him into the net.
And I just thought, when I watched that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you think that? Anyway, that's France. It's crazy. And they remain top of the table, PSG, just ahead of Monaco, with Lille in third place. Well done, Lille. In Germany, Borussia had a big win in the Ruhr derby against Schalke, and they're still just behind that Bayern Munich lot who beat Hertha Berlin, and there's Bayer Leverkusen there as well. And after those three, who are 1 point between them, there's a 9-point gap to the team in fourth.
Mm.
Crikey, Borussia Mönchengladbach.
And then promoted Hertha Berlin or something like
that. Yeah, they're up there. It's one of the, exactly. And then in Holland, how about this? The top three all lost. None of the top seven won in the Eredivisie. But the top nine now are separated by only 3 points. It's quite a lead, that, isn't it? That's Holland. And this is a bit of music, after which we're going to hear about the championship. The championship. Paul, you wanted to mention something about this.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it in passing, actually. And now you've created a whole section.
Which no, I've struggled to fill.
Oh, you've got
stuff.
Lots more.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Not well, lots more.
I just wanted to say congratulations to Danny Ings, who scored both goals in the top of the table clash in the championship. The 21-year-old scored 13 Leeds goals this season already, and he's had cruciate injuries on both knees in his career heretofore.
All right. Producer Ben wants to know, Danny Ings, what's his nickname? Could be so many things, couldn't it?
Ding Ding.
Could be Think. It could be...
It's probably Ingsy.
It probably is, actually. Or Dazza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'd like to also, on the subject of Burnley, extend my heartfelt commiserations to their mascot, Bertie B.
Well, right. Thank you for mentioning this. Tell us what happened. Okay, first, can I just set this up by saying this was the big top-of-the-table clash in the championship. Burnley against QPR, and QPR losing for the first time of this season. They dropped down to third place. They lost 2-0 at... Burnley. And what happened to Bertie B?
Bertie B was sent off for offering a linesman the use of his spectacles after what he believed to be a contentious decision, and was later photographed sitting in what looked like a makeshift prison behind the scenes somewhere in the bowels of the stadium.
Right. Surely Moor, a hive would be more.
Well, you'd think so. Hmm. He's in disgrace. And
that's a shame.
Probably get a two-match ban now or something.
Oh, I do hope not. Can't they just get another person to...
Well, I don't know. Do you suspend the suit or the person inside the suit? It's a very deep philosophical question.
We need Mark Halsey on the phone right now. The Clarets mascot, of course, is famous for having previously done his civic duty, helping stewards to tackle a naked pitch invader, which he celebrated by doing the worm along the touchline. That's the one. Paul's doing the worm.
Joey Barton. Joey Barton was in the worm.
Do you always do that when you say his name? Or? He got hit with a battle.
Yeah,
bottle
he was in the wars. He got hit by a
poor chap.
Flying bottle of coke.
Anyway, that's championship talk with Burnley now 3 points clear at the top. Leicester up to second after a 2-1 win at Bournemouth. That's a rustle of paper.
And Yeovil beat Nottingham Forest, didn't they?
Yeah. Ooh. 3-1.
Which is quite rather shocking result. Or
good.
A shock.
Mm. Now, there's still a little bit of stuff to do. Paul, you've got to go in a second, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got to go.
Before you go,
yes.
We've got to talk about Norwich Cardiff.
Oh.
0-0, yeah. But it should have been 1-0, Paul?
Well, yeah, I mean, it should have been because I think Norwich had the most chances on goal, often on target, of any club
in the
Premier League.
But they also scored a goal.
They also scored.
Tell us about that goal, Paul.
Well, one of our players was down injured,
yeah.
And Cardiff did the sporting thing and kicked the ball out, or also the time-wasting thing because they were trying to cling on to a point. A very angry Ricky van Walswinkel, who frustrated at this whole thing, gets the ball and throws it, rather than back to Cardiff, throws it to our player Leroy Fer. Cardiff goalkeeper's right out of his area because he'd assuming that he was going to get the ball back. And Leroy Fer turns and puts the ball in.
Into the empty net.
Into the empty net.
Goal.
It was a goal. But then the referee says, no, I didn't actually blow for the restart of play, so therefore it isn't a goal.
Right.
Although the rules say you don't have to blow for a restart play.
For a throw-in.
Looking for a little loophole in order to... The spirit of the game.
Because it's against the spirit of the game.
It is against the spirit of the game. And apparently Chris Hughton, the nicest man in football, which may prove to be his undoing at Norwich... said to Malky Mackay that had the goal been allowed, they would have just let Cardiff run down the other end.
Oh, that's a shame, because I love watching one team letting the other team score.
But surely with football being the nasty, cynical business it is, it's entirely in keeping with the spirit of the game to do something.
Well, it's quite... particularly listen to Leroy Fer talking about it after the game. He's all Dutch about it. It's kind of like, I want to win the game. Sure, what? I just took advantage of this situation.
See, yeah, I'm with Fer on this. I think he did the right thing. For his team. He's paid to win games for his team. The ball's there. Marshall's out of his goal. They've what? How many games have they won this season? Two or three?
Two.
They're 18th in the table. They are minus -7 on goals. They really need the 3 points. Score.
Yeah. And this whole business of putting the ball out of play, it's up to the ref to stop the game. Get treatment. So unless someone is quite visibly got a broken leg or something, or is seriously ill.
I don't mind players taking the initiative if they see one of their fellow professionals is in trouble that they put the ball. I'm not so bothered about that. You might be right about the time-wasting thing. I was a bit concerned about where David Marshall had wandered off to, because he wasn't even in shot when the throw was?
No, he just the back. He must have been expecting a configuration where it went to. There was another defender there that could have passed it back to him.
All right, well, anyway, a very goalless weekend for the Welsh, because Cardiff 0-0 at Norwich and Swansea 0-0 at home to West Ham. Of course, those two teams are going to be meeting in one of the big, big fixtures coming up next weekend. The other one being our arrival in Swansea. Looking forward to meeting you.
Never been, have you?
I haven't, no. Listen, Paul, you've got to go. Your headphones are already half off.
Yes, exactly.
But into the ear that we still have, I'm going to ask two questions. Mm-hmm. One, are Norwich going to beat Man U in the League Cup?
No.
And is Chris Hughton, we might just be able to sample that answer here, is Chris Hughton going to see out the season?
I really hope so, but I don't think so.
Oh, all right, then. Have a great time in London, Soho.
Thank you.
With your film buddies.
Yeah. Showbiz chums.
Right.
So, see Serge from Kasabian, tell him I was asking for.
I feel a little left out here. I'm the only one without any showbiz chums.
We're your showbiz chums, Ian.
Okay.
Barry and I.
Yeah. I do have a friend who won the Miss World competition.
No.
I can top the rest of you with that.
Rosanna Davison.
Yeah.
He's your buddy.
We used to hang out in college together.
She's
Krista Berg's daughter.
Krista Berg's daughter.
Krista Berg's daughter is Miss World?
Yes. Was.
She
was,
won it in about 2005, 2006, something like that.
I'm astonished by
and a fixture on the Dublin Lovely Girls scene.
That's my one claim to fame.
That's a pretty good claim to fame.
So
you used to hang out with Krista Berg's daughter?
Yeah, yeah. We were in the college fashion show together.
Were you a fashion student?
No. I was one of the...
Models.
You won't believe this, but yeah, I was one of the models.
Well, you have that kind of angular frame that would suit.
Kind of heroin chic look.
Yeah.
I'm just skinny, basically.
Yeah. So, and you used to hang out with Christopher's daughter, who then became Miss World.
Yeah, and she's done Playboy as well now.
This just gets better, this story. And you've been to Christopher's house, producer Ben tells me, the house that the Lady in Red built.
Yeah.
How is it?
It's very nice. It's in a very secluded part of Wicklow.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's quite big. I think there's deer stalking around.
It's like Graceland, basically, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah, but yeah. Without the kind of jumbo jet and the carpeted ceilings that they have at Graceland's.
I didn't know they had carpeted ceilings.
Yeah, yeah. If you go down, because I was there a few years ago, and you go down into one of the basement rooms, and there's like TVs on one wall, and then it's kind of got carpet on the ceiling above, and there's a little bar in the corner.
All right, then.
Yeah. This was part of my trip across America a few years ago.
Right, Ian. Hmm. There's a book in that. that's extraordinary. Well, that's exactly the kind of gem that you'd miss if you didn't listen to Football Weekly. There are so many ways, Barry, to listen to Football Weekly, but probably my favourite...
With your ears.
...is with my ears, Barry, using SoundCloud on them. Did you know you can listen to SoundCloud on your desktop or download their free app to your Apple or Android device? You can stream or download podcasts, share, link, favourite, and so much more. It just happens, I'm mentioning all of this off the cuff, because we've got a couple of treats for our SoundCloud listeners, but only them. This is all producer Ben's doing. You know this, don't you, listener? Anyway, we'll be posting next week that live show in Swansea. We're going to be putting it up on SoundCloud first. So if you're a SoundCloud listener, you can listen to it before other ordinary people. Crikey. We've also got an amazing giveaway from our friends at Sport Interactive. Hang on, who are these friends of ours? I don't know them.
I'd suggest they're merely acquaintances.
They make the Football Manager games anyway. And again, it's an exclusive thing for SoundCloud listeners, but more details soon, but only if you're a SoundCloud listener. I'm not sure I like the direction this is taking, producer Ben.
It's like we're trying to divide and conquer our audience. You iTunes plebs, I still love you.
Right. If you want to become one of them and not remain us, like ordinary listeners, soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly is the place for people like you. Ian, you had something you wanted to say about it. So you want to promote something.
Oh, I was just going to try to sell a bike.
Oh.
Nothing interesting.
What kind of bike are you selling, Ian?
Fixing.
Hold on, I'll just take the velvet rope across that we seem to have now got in situ here.
Yep.
And then you can... Yeah. Wheel your bicycle through.
Can I stress this offer is only for SoundCloud listeners.
It's only for SoundCloud listeners.
Yep.
They can buy
a
very colourful fixie bike that I'm trying to get rid of.
Oh, you want a fixie?
Yeah.
God, you would be, wouldn't you?
What's
super.
A fixie?
Fixed wheel bikes, the pedals keep on going. And you back pedal to brake.
Huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Do they not have those in Brixton, Barry?
I haven't cycled a bike in a long time.
No, no, but you wouldn't. This is
would I know one if I saw one?
Oh,
like
yeah. They're brightly coloured, and they tend to have kind of jaunty yellow rims and stuff. And there's no set of gears. There's basically just a chain that goes round. You've got one speed, no brakes.
No brakes?
Yeah.
On a bicycle?
I do have brakes.
And you're cycling through London on this death trap.
You can't have brakes on a fixie.
I have to cheat a little.
Yeah. Boy, you do. Anyway, we've digressed enough, listeners. Let's just get to, what do you want? A little bit more Premier League, League Cup, or a couple of posts?
I have some great Southampton information.
Okay, let's hear about Southampton. Yes. The Fulham game.
Well, they won 2-0 against Fulham, so yep. I got busy this morning, and I checked their... They've played 9 times this season. They're third in the table. I checked their corresponding fixtures last season and took the liberty of replacing QPR, who are no longer with us in the Premier League, with Crystal Palace. And from the equivalent matches last season, Southampton had no wins and just 4 draws. They had 4 points.
They had 4 points. How many points do they have now?
18.
Wow. That's top work, Barry.
Also, I did some digging in a very little bit of prep time I had, and they had let in 26 goals after 9 games last season. This season, they only have 3.
Yeah, which
makes them the best defence in the league.
Yeah, but not in Europe, because that's Roma.
Let in 1. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Against Parma. Why? There's Southampton. Of course, they had the win against Fulham, and Villa beat Everton. No, sorry, Everton beat Villa 2-0. And, oh, Spurs, we should talk about them, because that was a funny game, that Hull match on Sunday. You might not have seen this, because you were busy across the...
I haven't seen it, but I believe Andre Villas-Boas was quite critical of Spurs fans afterwards.
Yeah, now Hodgson got a real pasting for doing a similar thing at Anfield, and so far I haven't seen a kind of big backlash against AVB. It's a dangerous game to play, isn't it? Basically, he said that the crowd weren't supporting enough, and it was a bit like being the away team, even though they're at White Hart Lane.
Yeah, and there seemed to be an undercurrent of just grumbling and moaning throughout the game. They got no support. And he said they find it easier to play away from home. But this wasn't specifically his opinion. He claimed to be speaking on behalf of the team and said the team feel this way too. There must be something to it. And obviously it is a dangerous game to criticise the paying punters, but if they feel that fans aren't behind them, then they're probably entitled to do it.
Well, Tottenham were once again struggling after an away game in the Europa League. Last time out, they'd lost at home to West Ham. This time it was kind of goalless with Hull. It took a fairly controversial penalty to give them a win.
A ridiculous penalty.
All right, a ridiculous penalty, yeah.
And interestingly, Spurs have won 3 games this season, 1-0 on the back of contentious penalties.
Hmm.
So that's, 6 extra points they possibly don't deserve.
Now, I was talking about Andros Townsend last week, and I said, does anyone else think he's a little bit Forrest Gump-esque? And I'm not sure if you get my point after the unfortunate business with the side hoardings.
I didn't see this.
All right. Well, he was doing one of his runs, and he just didn't stop running.
Okay.
Yeah, and he just went into the thing, head over heels into the... And he actually... He hurt himself, I imagine. He really banged up one of the photographers. He had blood streaming from his
head. Perhaps that's how the White Hart Lane crowd could get help their team by telling him when to stop. Like the crowds at Forrest Gump's football games.
Indeed, they'll have another chance at giving Spurs better support against Hull, because, of course, it's Hull that Spurs face at White Hart Lane again on... I think it's Wednesday night, isn't it? This game is a League Cup. It's midweek League Cup action. You got your Tottenham Hull, Newcastle hosting Man City, which is interesting because Man City's form on the road is rubbish, and will Joe Hart play and blah, blah, blah. There's also Birmingham taking on Stoke, Leicester against Fulham, Burnley, who we mentioned before, beat QPR at the weekend, are going to be hosting West Ham. There's not that many places between them in the kind of hierarchy, is there? West Ham 15th in the Premier League.
Both managers could put out below strength teams there, because you'd imagine Burnley would want to focus on their championship campaign, and the championship is a very, very arduous, tough league, so they may just sacrifice the Capital One Cup.
All right.
It's very hard to predict these games talk about them, because you just don't know what kind of...
Particularly in the case of Arsenal and Chelsea,
yeah,
where Wenger famously uses the tournament as an opportunity to blood younger players, often quite literally. And Chelsea, well, you had Jose Mourinho, who all of a sudden has decided he's got a really rotten set of fixtures coming up. Not quite sure why that is. But anyway, he was saying he was going to put the under-21s out.
I think he's gone back on that a bit. Because, I mean, there's so many players out on loan anyway. But he said that none of the first team that played will play, I believe.
Oh, really? None of the team that played against City will play.
Against City will play, yeah. Right. So you get the likes of Juan Mata and Kevin De Bruyne and Bertrand and Schwartzel and David Luiz and Demba Ba will probably get a run at. So it's still quite a strong team that they have.
Okay, how about that? Well, that's pretty much it for today's Football Weekly. Ever so many thanks for joining us to the departed Paul McInnes and Barry Glendenning and Ian McCourt and producer Ben and you, the listener. We're back on Thursday with all that League Cup action and more. See you then.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.